Monster Man, bonus episode, October 2023. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode, going out to my Patreon backers at all levels as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. In these behind-the-scenes episodes, I mostly talk about what I've been up to over the past month, where I've been, what I've been doing, what I've been reading, what games I've been playing, etc., etc. So, let's get to it. The big thing that I did this month was I had some more travel, so I was in the United States for a little bit more than a week, visiting my old hometown of Palo Alto, California, to celebrate my father's 80th birthday. In fact, because my mother and my father have birthdays that are only a week apart, it was my mother's 79th and my father's 80th. And in fact, the other day was my birthday. So Octobers were, when we were kids, a pretty expensive month for my brother. Anyway, I was back in Palo Alto. I didn't really do very much other than spend time with my family. I did get a chance to get together with some friends to play some games. That was nice, especially people who I hadn't been able to make the schedules work with the last time that I was in the US. So that was good. I didn't do much game writing. I've decided to abandon Dungeon 23. I took a pretty good swing at the first half of the year, but my schedule was so disrupted in the last couple of months that I got out of the habit, and I didn't get back into it. And I do think, you know, sometimes if you get out of the habit of something and then you don't get back into it, you just need a little extra motivation. But if it happens a lot of times in a row, that can maybe be a sign that you don't really want to do it. I don't know. That's just a thought. I'm getting ready to do some fun stuff in the coming month. So I'll be in Scotland for almost a week, starting with an event at the National Library of Scotland with my colleagues from the History and Games Lab at the University of Edinburgh and Chaos Games Mike Mason. And then that weekend, I'm going off to go LARPing, as I often do. Might be a little chilly, but we'll see how it goes. Because I was traveling, I did get the chance to get some reading in. I read the new Glorantha book, Mythology, which is part of that Cults of Glorantha series, or Cults of RuneQuest, I think it's called. That was good. I enjoyed it. People have been praising it as if it were this great transformative work, maybe because I came into RuneQuest from the mythology angle, and I've read a lot of those like semi-canonical collections of notes, the Fortunate Succession and the Glorious Reascent of Yelm and the History of the Hurling Peoples and all that stuff. I tended to think about Glorantha in those terms as already, and then also, I guess, because my background's in archaeology, so I've done some reading in the sort of anthropology that underlay Greg Stafford's understanding of Glorantha, not exclusively, but that was definitely a part of it. But I still thought it was good, and I thought there were some valuable principles there. I read Douglas Wolk's book, All the Marvels, in which he reads every Marvel comic published between, I don't know, 1961 and 2017 or something like that. Parts of it, I thought, were, you know, intended for people who didn't have all that much background in the comics, but who were kind of coming into it from the movies. But parts of it were really interesting. They were about the unique features of this kind of storytelling, which I hadn't really thought about before. You know, sometimes I think that the continuity-focused, densely interwoven mode of American comic book storytelling, which is really kind of unique to just these two publishers. There are shared continuities at other publishers, but they don't. I mean, Valiant is the most obvious example. I don't know that it's on the same kind of scale, but it's really weird. It's a weird thing. It doesn't really exist in other media to the same extent, although obviously it does exist. And it has unique storytelling challenges and benefits. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I read some comics. I read part of the Al Ewing run on Guardians of the Galaxy. I like Al Ewing in general. I thought that was okay. And I read Mythic, a comic by Phil Hester and John McCrae. Now, I like Phil Hester. when I picked up the book, I realized that it was written by Phil Hester rather than drawn by Phil Hester. I like Phil Hester's art, but it turns out I also like his writing. And of course, John McCrae, he's a good artist. It was interesting because it's a book that starts out with a very clear setup and spends just a very short amount of time establishing that setup before then subverting it. And I sort of felt like I would like to have, it's a very kind of like role-playing gamey premise about characters who are essentially kind of like the maintenance workers of a mythical reality. But you only really get one or two examples of them doing their regular job before the big crisis hits. And I feel like I would have liked to have seen more. It feels like the premise of a TV show. I read the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society pamphlet, The Discovery of Fragments of Kitab al-Azif at Haran, which I thought was good. It referred to some excavations that I do know a little bit about. And in general, I thought it was, you know, I think that those publications are often tonally quite good at sounding like the thing that they're, you know, imitating. You can tell that the authors have done their research. I do think it doesn't quite match, but then I think also probably there are few people who have spent as much time reading older archaeological excavation reports as I have. Not that I've read like a huge amount, but the median person has read none, right? I've read dozens, certainly. So I feel like I have a pretty good familiarity with them. And there were a few bits where I thought, it doesn't quite sound like something that would come from this period. But I'm definitely glad I picked it up. I enjoy these kind of faux historical artifacts. For an upcoming review in 14 Times, I read Living with the Dead, which is a nonfiction book about funerary practices, which I thought was good. I was, like, I'll go into more detail when I write the review, but I was expecting it to be kind of a, like, pointy laughy tourist kind of book, where the authors go to different cultures, they look at different funeral rites, people in Ghana are buried in funny coffins, Parsis in India have trouble because declining vulture populations mean that the Towers of Silence don't work the way they used to, etc., 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 you know, and kind of do a sort of point at this and go, oh, that's wild thing. But actually, I thought it was quite humane and intelligent and just like a look at the different strategies that people use to deal with the huge disruption, social or emotional, that is the death of someone close to you. And finally, I read the new Stargrave book, Bold Endeavor. I really want to get back into playing Stargrave. I'm already committed to playing in a new Rogue Trader campaign, running my existing Rogue Trader campaign, and maybe playing some Rangers of Shadowdeep and working on a big cryomech project with a friend. So obviously what I need is to start playing Stargrave again. It seemed interesting. These things are judged in the play and I haven't played Stargrave in like a year, but I'd like to. And of course, because I had plane flights, I watched some movies. I watched the new Wes Anderson film, Asteroid City. I mean, I feel like Wes Anderson movies are one of those things, you know, if you like them, you do. If you don't, then you boo. I like them, as it happens, and I thought that this one had a lot of the things that I like. It must be difficult, I sometimes think, to be an actor in a Wes Anderson film, because you really are being used as a kind of, like, Lego figure or something, but he keeps getting good people to be in them, so it can't be all that awful. I watched the new Indiana Jones film, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. It was fine. It was basically better than the previous one, only insofar as Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character was more engaging than Shia LaBeouf's. There were some bits of it that didn't quite work for me, but like, ultimately, it was 2 hours of good, clean fun, which is what these movies should aspire to, right? I watched Jordan Peele's horror follow-up, Us, which I thought was very good. I know that it was very successful, but I think that it doesn't have the same reputation as Get Out does. And there were bits of it where I thought, this feels more like a concept for a horror movie than a horror movie. I wasn't experiencing the same kind of tension, but there were bits of it that I thought were great. I've been on a kick about watching Michael Mann films, and so I watched his gangster film Public Enemies, which I thought was kind of a mess, filmed right around the time Johnny Depp was really starting to wear out his welcome, and a film that it seemed to me couldn't really decide what it wanted to be about. Also, I don't know that Marion Cotillard, at least at that stage in her career, could convincingly play a girl from Milwaukee. I watched Sopranos' prequel movie, The Many Saints of Newark, which was unexceptional. I think the thing that really stood out about it was how the people playing like the central characters were playing characters in a more or less conventional way. And there was a little, you know, there were little bits that connected them to their characters from the TV show. And you could look at them and go, it's interesting to think about how this person is going to turn into Polly Walnuts. You know, can I see a connection? Not that Polly Walnuts, a big character in the movie, but, you know, just for instance, can I see a connection between this person and the Polly Walnuts of the future? And then the fellow that plays Silvio is just doing a Steve Van Zandt impression. It's incredibly distracting. I watched Judas and the Black Messiah, the film about the life and death of Fred Hampton. A historical picture like this, a lot of the time, I don't come away with much more of an impression beyond, my goodness, Lakeith Stanfield can act. And for that matter, of course, you know, my goodness, Daniel Kaluuya can act, but I thought it was good. One thing that I think a lot of Hollywood historical films don't convey very well is the age of people. So there's a note at the end that says that Fred Hampton was, you know, 21 or something when he died. He was very young. And Daniel Kaluuya, although he's not an old man, of course, but he's in his mid-30s. So there's a pretty notable difference. This is a little bit like war movies, which often fail to portray just how young everybody is. But, you know, having said that, I mean, I thought it was great. I can't put my finger on what it is that makes a character a Jesse Plemons role, but there sure do seem to be a lot of them going around these days. I saw the most recent Mortal Kombat film. I don't even have a strong attachment to Mortal Kombat as a franchise. It's not one of those video games where the lore has been super important for me. I've never really played it. I think I don't find the visual design of Mortal Kombat games very interesting. Characters are sort of too upright somehow. I don't quite know how to describe the movement and like model interaction in a Mortal Kombat game other than janky. People don't look like they're fighting. They look weird. It's no Street Fighter. Anyway, that movie was on the plane that I was on. And that's maybe the best thing you can say about it. I guess it was fine. It was nice to see What's-His-Face from Woo Assassins still working. I watched the new animated Ninja Turtles film, TMNT Mutant Mayhem, which I thought was actually quite good. It was good fun. You know, I mean, again, it played up maybe more than, and this is not like an original insight, but it played up more than other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles films the teenage aspect of it, which I thought made a lot of sense. And it was just kind of, you know, all ages enjoyable. It didn't take itself deadly seriously, but it wasn't a spoof. It was an action comedy, and it was good. And finally, it was Bad Movie Night, and therefore I watched Bad Movie, The Iron Dragon Strikes Back, which is a Hong Kong action film from the 70s, maybe the 80s, and certainly is a film that exists. Gaming-wise, I mentioned that I played some games with some friends in California, and in particular, we played Vampire, The Masquerade, Chapters, a very weird board game, extremely complex and fiddly, ambiguous in a lot of places, but still in some ways a satisfying experience. Games like that, I don't know how I feel about them, because to my mind, they're often, it's sort of trying to give you the experience of playing Vampire the Masquerade, but it is much more expensive and just as time-consuming as playing Vampire the Masquerade. It's like Mansions of Madness, right? A game that is much more work than just playing Call of Cthulhu. And yet, there's something about it. The kind of compression of RPG play into a board game meant that you got this fistful of storylines that you wouldn't have got in a tabletop role-playing game, right? So, you know, you wouldn't have got in one day's worth of tabletop RPG play a heist and a big fight with a monster and investigating a crime scene and doing diplomacy and so forth, right? Like, they're all kind of bite-sized versions of those game experiences. So in some ways, it conveyed some of the key ideas. I ran some of my D&D game. I didn't necessarily feel great about it. I set up a reveal, and then it just didn't quite work out. One of the things about running a game where the players are in the driver's seat is that sometimes you'll have a piece of information that you'd like to be revealed at like a cool or dramatic moment, but instead it just happens that someone comes along and tells the players about it because it's the only way to get it to them. You know, things just haven't quite worked out that way. And you just have to accept that that's the price of freeforming. You can't shape things for dramatic effect as effectively. And sometimes I feel bad about that, and I have to kind of remind myself, you know, that's the nature of the business. In the next session, they're going to go raid a house built as a training school for thieves to rescue a crooked art dealer from a vampire. And I'm so pleased with myself because I set up the idea that this house was a training school for thieves long before I thought they were going to raid it. And that means that there's going to be traps and like dungeon nonsense. And every piece of dungeon nonsense I want to put in there, I can justify by saying, training school for thieves. Also played in my regular game. We're struggling a little bit with scheduling at present. People are getting a group of adults in the same place at the same time. It's just challenging. It's just how it is. But, we're not even in the same place. We're online at the same time. I got back to my RuneQuest game, played a session of that, and I have another session coming up this week. That's been a lot of fun. I don't wholly love the RuneQuest system. Not that I have anything against its basics, but it's just a little more complicated than I like my games. Like, it's not beyond my limit of complexity in games that I like, but it's definitely toward the high end of my spectrum. So I'm not wild about the system, but I'm enjoying the game a great deal, and I'm enjoying getting to interact with the other players. I also played a session of the BRP game Mythic Iceland, which I also enjoyed. Again, BRP, not my most beloved system, but like, it's perfectly functional. It has nothing fancy, but it also has nothing terrible. So, and I do love 10th century Iceland as a setting, and a good time was had by all. And astonishingly, this one-shot scenario really got done in about 3 hours. The group that I play with on these occasions, we have a great time, but we do have a tendency to leave things unfinished, which then spiral into longer campaigns. Our current Call of Cthulhu campaign is basically a series of follow-ups to last year's Halloween game. This was the annual Halloween game. Every year we get together and we play some kind of game on Halloween with a suitably spooky theme. So a good time was had by all, and I guess we're playing Mythic Iceland now? It's not clear. But next month for that group, I am GMing a game that was written by a friend of mine, and we're going to test it out and see how it all goes. So I'm looking forward to that as well. As I mentioned, I've got this Call of Cthulhu event coming up, and then going to go do some LARPing. It is a bit of a challenge. You know, one of the things about LARP is that if you don't have a car, which I don't, it's actually one of the reasons we're thinking about getting one. I never bothered getting a UK driver's license or anything like that because I lived in such a cyclable place, and like, I could take the train to go other places and so forth. You know, it didn't come up often enough. But then I started LARPing in a field LARP where there's a lot of luggage involved that's a long way away, and I got a dog. And between those two things, you know, I need to get to places that are remote a little more frequently now, because the kinds of places that you can go on holiday with a dog, it's just your options are a lot greater if you're not trying to take the train. So it may not be such a hassle in the future, but right now it's a bit challenging to fit everything into a number of bags and suitcases that's manageable on the train journey, to say nothing of trying to get home at a reasonable hour on Sunday night. But the main thing here is that the event has kind of got two parts to it, and one part of it is there's going to be like a wedding reception. Two of the characters are getting married, and I just don't have the capacity to, like, you know, put on my character's formal wear for this event. You know, I got a fancy version of my outfit with a dress coat and, you know, medals and things, but it's not practical for me. So I'm just going to have to, like, put on a nice tie or something. I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine, but it is one of the challenges of being super excited about a game that's very far away from my house. Other than that, I'm participating in this year's Trash Bash model building competition. It's something I do every year, or every year that the competition runs. I painted a big orc for Orktober. I'm trying to have a painting project each month, and starting in a couple days, it's going to be this cryomech thing. So we're going to see how that all goes. I bought a bunch of secondhand cryomech models because my friend likes cryomech, and I thought we could do a big painting project for them. And I don't know if I'm prepared enough, but we'll see. Anyway, that's kind of what I've been up to, playing some games, painting some models, writing some things. I'm starting to develop my ideas for next year's Zine Quest, which is actually in like 4 months, you know. So I'm trying to get out ahead of it. I usually don't start till the middle of the month, and that's maybe not the greatest. So we'll see how it all goes. But I hope to have more to tell you about it before too long. But anyway, yeah, that's what I've been up to, and I appreciate you hanging out and letting me talk about it. Coming up on Monster Man is going to be a period of specials. I think I said that, but we're kind of between seasons right now, and it might stay there for a little while, just for convenience. But we've got some great special topics lined up, and I think you're really going to enjoy them. So I hope that you will stick around to listen to them right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.